be honest, this morning when you looked in the mirror as you were getting dressed, didn't the question of fat cross your mind? Maybe it's because you were thinking about what or what not to have for breakfast, or you might have felt especially comfortable or uncomfortable with your body and the way your clothes fit these days. Today on Please Explain, we're going to talk about fat in all of its forms and functions, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And joining us now is Maudine Nelson, a registered dietitian who teaches at the Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons Institute of Human Nutrition and at the Naomi Berry Diabetes Center at the Columbia Presbyterian Medical Center. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
I read that about a third of Americans are considered obese. Can that be true?
It is. It's taken from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, in which people are actually taken into a mobile van. They're measured their height, weight. Pregnant women are eliminated from the group. But in fact, yes, the body mass index of 25 to 30, which represents overweight, or over 30, which represents obesity, you know, in a technical definition, is found in at least 31 or 38% of people. Isn't that scary?
Well, when do we go from just being fat, as we used to say people were, to being obese?
Well, we've always had sort of affectionate ways of saying it. And, you know, you've heard people say there's bass in your band, or you're looking at your caboose or high pockets. And so when did it become something that wasn't just an affectionate kind of, you know, tease? And it's the more we can see the changes in the world, what we can call the putative contributions to obesity, to excess body weight. In other words, you consume more than you burn. And that's not just the marketing of high-fat, high-sugar foods, although that's very, very big part of it. It's not only the number of hours that we watch TV, or the fact that we don't get enough sleep, or the fact that we live in warmer rooms. You know, our ambient temperatures are different from the way they might have been 30 or more years ago. There are contributions even that there are fewer smokers, and that affects energy expenditure, energy balance. So it's really complicated.
I put on weight when I quit smoking.
Yeah, it's quite complicated.
But you mentioned we stay in warmer places. So being in a cooler place actually keeps us thinner?
There's a
Is that
very...
why polar bears are never really fat?
I hope not. But we're worried about the polar bears because they don't have enough ice to hunt on. It's combination of things, and then of course there's the genetic predisposition and many, but it's in our face. It's there. We need to halt it and reverse it, because it's costing us quality of life. It's costing us medical concerns.
On the other hand, fat is a really important part of life. So let's go back.
Yes.
And define fat.
Ah.
First of all, is it an inert matter?
Let me call fat just sort of an organic compound. So what a normal person would think of as an organic compound means that it's something made up of some atoms of carbon and hydrogen and oxygen. And when you touch it, it has a sort of slippery feel. And it is absolutely essential to life. It's kind of one of those things where you can't live with it, can't live without it. We can consider fat the stuff that's in your food. There's fat in nuts. There's fat in a teeny bit in vegetables. You can definitely see the fat in meats and fish and poultry. And then there's the fat in our bodies. And as long as there have been living organisms, there's been fat.
Is fat in mammals different than fat in other animals? For example,
yeah.
A chicken fat, would it be pretty much the same sort of thing as human fat, steak fat?
The composition of the fat in the body of a human reflects the composition of the fat in our diets. So if we eat a lot of the saturated fats, which would be those fats that are hard at room temperature, then our tissue will have more if we eat more unsaturated fats. Pigs actually have the same trend. The tendency to the fat in their bodies reflects the fat of their diets. I had a great conversation with a PhD from Georgia, describing when people used to let their hogs forage, they ate a lot of acorns. And the acorn, who thought it, has a lot of unsaturated fat, which is, of course, liquid. And when the pigs would be slaughtered, the fat in the tissue of the animal was actually running off the table. It's kind of a
and many people, many foodies are upset that that pork is now so lean, and it's probably because they're just eating what the farmers are giving them.
I wish we could have pigs that come from real farms. The agri business of all four-legged critters that make it to our plates really does control the amount of carbohydrate, the amount of protein, the amount of fat they eat, and that changes the way their bodies deposit it.
So what's the composition of fat? What does adipose tissue mean?
Ah, okay. That's adipose tissue is actually connective tissue. So we think of connective tissue as the stuff that kind of holds us together. And this time what it's connecting is fat. It's holding, it's storing fat. And if you looked at it under a microscope, it would actually be, you'd look like you had a diamond ring lying on its side, and that it's glistening and shiny on the inside, and it has this little bulgy part, which is where the nucleus, because it is a cell. And the fat it allows the body, our bodies, all animals, to store enough fat for future excess. Also, though, another essential function of fat is part of cell membranes. It's the cushioning of our bodies. But the fat that's really mean is the belly fat. That's the fat that is so strongly associated with higher insulin levels, higher blood sugar levels, higher triglyceride levels. But the fat below the waist might even be thought of as protective.
My guest is Maudine Nelson, who is a registered dietitian, teacher at Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons Institute of Human Nutrition, and also at the Naomi Berry Diabetes Center at the Columbia Presbyterian Medical Center. We're talking about fat on today's Please Explain. In a little while, we'll be taking your calls at 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Please don't send me any email because I have no access to the email that you send. Again, the number 212-433-9692. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. I want to go back again. Okay, so the belly fat, the fat that unfortunately some people hangs way over their belts, that's the ugly fat, and the fat on the buttocks and thighs, that is often considered actually rather attractive. And is that because it is fat that is more usable for us? When you mentioned earlier, we store fat for lean times. Is that the fat is that where we're storing it?
You should be able to store fat and use all of it for making extra energy to required in our day. The deal is that fat cells are not just little balloons filled with fats. They actually secrete or produce hormones. And the hormones they produce include sex hormones, include hormones that have to do with appetite regulation. But the more belly fat you have, this fat tends to make our bodies what we call insulin resistant. And
It look different than the other fat? Do fats
it's
look
the
different?
Midriff fat.
No, but I mean, if I were to look at fat in the body under a microscope, or even if I just were to cut open the belly and then cut open a thigh, would the fat look the same to me?
Well, make sure you have a napkin in your lap. It's the way that it sort of infiltrates other organs and muscles. That's what makes it nasty. Not that it's just a different kind of fat cell.
But aren't there white fats and brown fats?
Yes. Oh, so brown fat, and here's the good news. I hear the choir singing. The brown fat is the stuff that doesn't have the function of giving us fuel for, the times we run out of it, but actually burns calorie to make heat. So, and it's brown.
So that's the most accessible of all the fat in our body.
It's accessible?
Well, I mean, it's the one that we're going to, when we need energy, we go to that one first.
No, brown fat generates heat.
Ah.
So when we're cold, it helps to maintain body temperature. And that's particularly in animals that don't shiver and animals that hibernate. Neither of those include you or me or everybody we know, but we still have brown fat.
What animal doesn't shiver?
I don't think mice shiver.
Oh, really?
Or the rodent critters. I haven't actually sat with one, you know, on a cold bench.
I'm sure you wouldn't. You'd probably be screaming if there were one that walked into this office, this studio right now. I know I would be. So the brown fat is there,
yes,
to create heat.
Exactly, and it's very important in infants. Mm. Oh, here's another one that doesn't shiver. It's very important for heat maintenance. And it seems to be, from a lot of very recent research, there's more of it in our bodies than we thought, and it's located across your, sort of down the back of the neck and various areas. And it would be really nice to be able to turn on the brown fat. And it seems, though, if you're in a cold room, this is when studies have been done to scan and see the heat production occurs, does not occur when you're in a comfortable room. So that might contribute, let's just say, I'm going to pull this number and hope I can stand behind it, like 80 calories a day difference.
So turn up the air conditioning, you'll lose a little weight?
I think that's an energy mistake, energy balance mistake. Actually, turn down the heat. That's a little easier. And we mammals put most of our extra fat as we age around our equator, mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily midriff fat always. It's just sort of the bottom. It's like if you're going diving and you put your weights here. That's the best and easiest place for us to carry it.
It's just simply a matter of
it's like
us not getting a bad back.
More or less, but that's a whole other discussion.
Now, is there a direct connection between ingestion and creation of fat? If I eat fried chicken, will that create more fat cells than if I eat a carrot?
Yes, with a qualification. Once you've made your fat cells, unless you have excessive calorie intake, you generally have a fixed number of fat cells as an adult. So what happens is the cells will get bigger as they store more that fat. And it's storing fat because you consumed more energy than your body used that day, and it'll take whatever that margin of extra energy is, convert it into fat, and stash it into fat cells. And a fried chicken meal will more likely contribute to that than a pile of carrots.
So stashing it into the fat cells, in evolutionary terms, is good for us because we might go through lean times, and then that energy that's stored in the fat cells can then be used.
Perfect logic.
But for most of us who are no longer in that kind of situation, we eat every day, maybe eat more than we should, we're just storing more and more fat cells.
We're storing more and more fat in our fat cells.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you kind of really assess that? I'm glad that the restaurants have calories on the labels, although those calories are not all fat. But the higher the content of fat in food, the higher the calories. Fat's 9 calories per gram compared to carbohydrate at 4.
And does this work the same for women and men? Because men and women put on fat in different places.
True. There are gender differences in location of fat. But it's most likely the social than physiological, that women may have more access to food and may have more of a preference for sweet things than men do. Certainly there's roles with estrogen levels and serotonin and the absolute bliss of eating something that's gooey. So that there are gender differences, but the fact that women might on average be heavier than men as a percent of their body weight from fat might just be more about our lives than our physical or genetic history.
Now, why does fat taste so good?
Good one.
For example, I remember one Waverly Root once joked, Gaul is divided into 3 fats, butter, lard, and olive oil. I guess Italy also is divided into a few fats. In fact, any number of places. But there's always a fat, and
there's always a
preferred fat.
Fat coats food and makes it smoother. It gives it what the food scientists call mouthfeel. And a smooth mouthfeel, which is why fatty meats taste better than lean meats and why salad dressing on salad makes the salad more appealing.
I'm assuming that when you get too fat, it's unhealthy, although a a little bit of excess weight isn't necessarily bad. What about too thin?
No, that's sort of so unappreciated for what it might be indicating. First, as a clinical nutritionist, a person who's very thin, I'm suspecting that they are volunteering to undereat.
You're talking about bulimics
right,
or anorexics.
Right. I'm not sure I can label anyone having anorexia or bulimia, but that's a sure clue. There are a lot of people who are just thin by nature and don't have revved appetite, and so they stay quite lean. And others who perhaps have a gene that affects their desire to keep eating, their satiety levels. So there is this new fat gene identified very recently, like in the last 3 or 4 years, and it has the initials FTO. Actually, something to do with finding it in rats that have fused toes. That's the FT part of it.
Wow.
Because it also used to have an acronym of FATSO, but that's awfully cruel. So
fat toes is better.
Fat toes, fat fused toes is better. So if someone has this gene, it's found to occur where people weigh as much as 6 or 7 pounds heavier than someone without the gene. And you'd think, well, 6 or 7 pounds, well, that's a clothing size for some. But what it doesn't affect how much calories you burn, but it affects how many calories you eat. It affects your satiety. And when I've done nutrition education with groups of people or a one-on-one who are trying to lose weight, getting the information across so that you understand where the calories are and, meal planning, that's a little bit of a task, but people get that. The hard part is doing it, because there are pleasure centers in the brain that respond to high-fat, high-sugar foods, and when you discontinue them or dramatically reduce them, you have withdrawal symptoms. And that's a lot to ask, to ignore those.
And then you're at that restaurant, and you've finished the meal, and you're full, and they bring over that little menu and say,
that big
how
menu.
About dessert?
Or that cart. And you deserve it.
We have to take a little break. When we come back, we'll be taking listener calls, and I'll also be addressing some of the comments you left on our show page at WNYC.org. Our phone number, 212-433-9692. My guest is Maudine Nelson, and we're talking about fat on today's Please Explain. We're back with Maudine Nelson, a registered dietitian who teaches at the Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons Institute of Human Nutrition and at the Naomi Berry Diabetes Center at the Columbia Presbyterian Medical Center. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. People have also been leaving questions on our comment line, and one that I was going to ask you is, what's the relationship between cholesterol and fat?
Well, that's been well documented for decades, that the higher amount of saturated fat you eat, the higher your blood cholesterol level, notably your low-density lipoprotein. Several months ago, what's called meta-analysis was published, in which the saturated fat association was a little bit debunked. But there's, for the last 50 years, looking at nations all over the world. So where is saturated fat? Mostly, it's in foods that where you can see the fat is solid. And maybe you'll look at a piece of beef and not say, oh, there's solid fat, but think of it after it's cooked and cooled. And those are the fats, not necessarily the food, but the fats you should minimize.
Now, you also teach at the Naomi Berry Diabetes Center. What's the link between fat and diabetes?
Curiously, a very high-fat diet, diabetes is something you're genetically predisposed to. People think you catch diabetes by eating too much sugar, but it's simply not the case. You can develop type 2 diabetes by having excessive amounts of fat, notably the belly fat again. And a high-fat diet is associated with even more insulin resistance, meaning more tendency towards type 2 diabetes.
So what happens is if you have that could trigger diabetes if you're not producing enough insulin, and that might be because you have too much fat.
Yes, in the big picture, all of it is vicious. So the lower the saturated fat and the total fat, the better.
But if somebody doesn't have a genetic predisposition, they could be 600 pounds and not have diabetes.
It's possible, yes.
Let's take a call from Alex from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air. Hi. Alex, you there?
Yeah.
Go.
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead. You should turn off your radio because you're probably hearing us on lag.
I turned it off.
Okay, go ahead.
My question is about BMI. There's a misleading factor of BMI with people who work out and lift weights and are actually way more than usual, but they don't really have that much fat on them. So they think they would be labeled overweight, but in front of a mirror, they don't really look that fat and don't have that much fat on their body.
That looks quite true.
Now, athletes often have those tests.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the reason for that? The lower the BMI, the more fit you are?
The lower the BMI, in other words, the less fat, the less weight you have at your height, you are assumed to be the proper proportion of fat and muscle and bone and everything else. And the higher your weight for your height, generally the only thing that's increasing at that point is your amount of fat. But if you're an athlete and you're pumping iron, you may gain a lot more muscle mass. And I'm, happy for that person to have to refute the fact that their BMI is not in the ideal range. But clearly there are millions who are not doing the kind of activity that should, explain that differential.
Although I've always wondered about those ideal body weights, because some people are bigger boned, for example, and yet they're the same height, they could be the same weight, and one can look fat and the other one can look really healthy.
So big bone is another one of those phrases like...
I like that phrase.
High pockets. That your skeletal mass is not going to be the huge determinant of your body weight.
Aren't they the mesomorphs and?
Yeah, those term mesomorph, endomorph, and ectomorph are in our research and in our textbooks. But we do things a lot more fine tuned now. So a person could get the body BIA. Suddenly I can't remember how to say the words, but where you're looking at the percent of body fat by another kind of analysis, and then you don't have to consider, do I have huge bones? So the deal is there are people who are going to be fatter as a proportion of their total weight than others, and that doesn't necessarily associate them with having a higher, predicting that they're going to have more illness.
Let's take another call. Catherine from Massapequa. Hi, you're on the air.
We were wondering about the belly fat. With excess belly fat, you mentioned that you're more predisposed to insulin intolerance and hence diabetes and all the sequelae of diabetes, heart attack, stroke, and the like. So I'm wondering if liposuction of belly fat helps reduce those risks.
My understanding, and that the answer is I don't know exactly, but I'll give you a quick probably right, is that when you go for liposuction, they're really doing body sculpting, and the belly fat might be one area as well as others, but that doesn't really change your risk much, because it's the fat in the intra-abdominal is the proper way I should be saying it, is not on the surface. It's closer to the internal organs, and that fat will not be removed through liposuction, nor through 7,500, chin-ups a day, or chin-ups and sit-ups and so on. That fat is something that is going to respond more to your having a reduction in your calorie intake and or an increase in your calorie expenditure that's consistent over months and months, so that you lose the total body fat and then the belly fat goes with total.
Thank you so much for your call. Francis from Harlem. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I had gallbladder surgery and it was removed, and I was told that gallbladder has something to do with processing fat in your body. Is that true? And what happens once you don't have it, and what do you do about it, about the fat?
Well, hi, and the answer is your gallbladder stores bile, and the bile is produced in your liver, and then bile is used to help your body digest dietary fat. So if you eat a meal, whether it has salad dressing or chicken with skin or peanut butter and jelly, there's fats in those foods. And once the fat enters your digestive tract, the bile duct contracts and sends out the gallbladder contracts, sends out the bile, and you can properly digest the fat. Once the gallbladder is removed, you're unable to store bile. So a high amount of fat in one meal might make you feel kind of miserable. Could bring on nausea and just a general sense of, I don't think I'm going to do that again. And it's not because your body does not change how it stores fat. It's how you digest fat. If you can store bile, you can use a lot of it at one time, but if you don't store it, you can only use a little bit at a time because that's how it's, you're using it at the rate that your body makes it.
Okay.
Is that good?
Yeah. Thank you very much.
And along these lines, we have a call, Mark from Chelsea, about livers. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Leonard. How are you?
Okay.
Recently, I had a physical, and I was sent by my doctor to have a liver sonogram. And I was told that my liver is very fatty. And then when I asked the girl after it was over on a scale of 1 to 10, what would she say it was, she told me it was a 7.5 or an 8 as far as the fat. So I'm wondering how does one get a fatty liver and what are the negative side effects of having a fatty liver?
The fat infiltrates into your liver when it has nowhere else to go. And that sounds a little odd. So let's just say most of one of the ways you get a fatty liver is by being very, very, very over fat. The fat stores in the fat cells, and when the fat cells are almost full, the fat starts to migrate to your muscles, and you have fat streaks in your muscles, and eventually the fat will start to deposit in the liver. And it impairs the liver's function. And the awful outcome in the end is that the liver becomes scarred because of the fat altering how the liver's cells can work. Another way that people get a fatty liver is through, and this is very unlikely, but it's on the list, extreme malnutrition. And that's, again, a series of steps that occur because the body's not able to make various substances. And the third most common reason for fatty liver is alcohol intake that is, I will say excessive, but then we need to define excessive. But I guess most people know what excessive would be. And that's also an effect of alcohol on how the liver, once again, can perform its function. And fat is a symptom of a liver that's injured.
A listener writes she's lost a lot of weight, but cellulite remains. Is that a different kind of fat?
Well, it's a marketing word. There's really no such thing as cellulite. You have fat cells, which...
But we do have that pebbly thing.
Yeah, that's because, remember, fat cells are connective tissue, and they're in clusters. So you do that sort of orange peel-looking skin. It's not a new kind of cell. It's just it's still a case of the amount of fat under the skin and the sort of the pressure against the skin showing that tissue. So if it can keep exercising and still losing a bit more, you might still see that go.
Chris from Huntington, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I had a question about vegetarianism. I'm a recently converted to a vegetarian diet, and I've seen, as of this point, only positive effects. I've lost some stubborn body fat, and my cholesterol has come down, and I just feel 100% better. I was wondering if your guest could talk a bit about the pros and cons of a vegetarian diet, and also about what I refer to as the protein myth, where I have people constantly telling me that I, need to be concerned about getting enough protein, while they're inhaling a bacon cheeseburger in front of me. So,
or people are concerned about anemia.
Yes.
If you don't eat at least a little bit of meat.
I think plant-based diets are the essence of how human beings should be eating. And if you opt to eliminate all animal flesh, that's fine. You will still get all of your essential amino acids, and you will still get your essential fats. You might have a little more problem getting iron, but most men are very efficient with how they conserve their iron, so you're not as likely, but you simply have your regular medical follow-up. So anemia would be one. Calcium sources, if again, depending on what foods you're keeping and what foods you've opted to eliminate, You may need to make sure you're getting a good calcium source, and vitamin B12 if you are eliminating all animal products and not having any foods like tempeh, which are fermented. And there's a little controversy as whether tempeh, which is a soy food, has a significant B12. But I think, in general, human beings need to eat a much more, like 3/4 of the plate should be plants and 1/4 or less to be animals.
But when that's the way it's been in throughout history, and it's only the enriched American diet where we have a situation where meat become the thing rather than just a flavoring in Chinese food, for example.
Exactly. And again, customary. If you found out from great-grandparents what was on the plate, it was a much smaller amount of flesh, and everyone was quite well-nourished as far as protein goes.
Well, the flip side of that is the Atkins diet, and Jack from New Jersey wants to know, how does that work? It tells you to eat fat, and yet you lose fat.
Okay, so it works for some people. The Atkins Foundation has published when one has a high-protein diet that it could well help with reducing insulin resistance, which is helpful. When insulin resistance goes down, you can have a drop in your cholesterol, a drop in your blood sugar. But what's important is that, again, physiologically, some people are much more sensitive to the amount and kind of carbohydrate they eat. So when they switch to very low carbohydrate, they improve. But I think as a style of eating for all human beings, a high-protein diet consisting of, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 chicken pieces and beef and cheese and all the cream cheese and sour cream you want is not physiologically very smart.
Melody asks, can you explain why generally men seem to be able to lose weight so much quicker than women? She says she assumes this is related to women biologically being able to have children.
I think you're right, Melody, and I'm mad about it, too. I don't want to take it anymore.
That's because women have to store that extra bit of energy to have it available during their pregnancy?
It's possible. It's a lot of that. We have a higher fat mass naturally. We're about a normal woman, so-called ideal normal, is 24% fat. That's how much our weight is made up of fat. Men is lower. The percent is lower. But for the amount of calories that we would enjoy, we don't have the same amount of energy burned as a man. So I could eat the same food as my husband, and I'll gain, he won't.
I want to thank you so much for being with us on today's Please Explain discussion of fat. Maudine Nelson is a registered dietitian who teaches at the Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons Institute of Human Nutrition and at the Naomi Berry Diabetes Center at the Columbia Presbyterian Medical Center. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.